Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our guest is Peyman Tai, the founder of VizMe, and we're going to talk about designing effective presentations. This episode is brought to you by Balsamiq, the most focused tool for low-fidelity wireframing. Other tools let you fidget with details all day. Balsamiq wireframes keeps you focused on functionality and copy, period. With all new desktop apps and collaboration features, Balsamiq has improved a lot since you've last used it. It's time to give it another look. Check it out at balsamiq.com. Hi, Peyman.
Hello, Jane. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks so much for joining us today for this conversation.
My pleasure.
Before we get started, could you tell us a bit about yourself and the story behind VizMe and how you got started?
Sure. So I'm more of a self-taught designer. I went to school studying biology back in 1999, 2000, when I was coming off. And to pay my way through school, I started designing websites. That's when they're getting popular. And then fast forward, I skipped going to graduate school instead of becoming a sports medicine and so on. Started a little web agency, just me as a freelancer, and then eventually about seven or eight people designing websites. In those days, most of the websites I was doing were in Flash. For those that have been around that long, that's when all the websites were animated. And then, you know, 2008, 2009, when the iPhone came out, it disrupted the whole industry because it would no longer support Flash technology. And so designers no longer could use Flash, or it basically went out the door quickly because you couldn't play anything on your mobile device, tablet, and so on with Flash. So anyway, that hit my agency pretty hard. We didn't go out of business or anything, but we pivoted a little bit late. So that was lesson number one. You always have to be in the forefront and see what's coming next and try to, you know, go with the wave, you know, and it's okay to innovate, but when you see something coming, you gotta try to stay ahead of the curve or go with it. And so what that happened was, as a result of that, and one of the, I have no regrets as starting an agency because I learned a few things, and that's what led me to start VizMe. And A, that was where me as a designer, I was used to creating graphics, presentations, you know, websites, you know, and so on, using Macromedia or sometimes even PowerPoint, because that's what the client wanted us to use. And I would use three or four or five different tools, Photoshop, Illustrator, you know, and Adobe Flash, and sometimes even take the little short animation or graphic back into the PowerPoint. So every single one of these tools has a different user interface. So you're kind of, you know, even though you could be a great professional, even today, when you go between three, four different tools constantly back and forth, it's not a very smooth workflow. So that was challenge number one that I saw. Number two is where I noticed that a lot of people that were coming in, most of them trying to get websites, and they were saying, hey, I just need to do X, Y, and Z. Why can I not do it on my own? Why do I have to go through a designer? So I saw that coming. That's where on the onslaught of Squarespace, Wix, and all these site builders came, right? And so I saw that challenge, and I thought the next phase of that is going to be where people want to be able to create graphics, presentations, and so on, compelling ones on their own. Anybody can use PowerPoint and create a presentation. We all know that they're not necessarily great looking, beautiful, right? So in 2011, 2012, behind the scenes, very slowly, bootstrapped with no funding or anything, just using some of the profits from my agency, which, by the way, was going, you know, down in revenue every year because we were now much more different than the other companies that are doing WordPress sites. And so we launched VizMe as a replacement for Flash initially. It wasn't a presentation tool. It was just meant to be for someone like myself and other designers who wanted to create what they did in Flash in a browser as the output of the content being HTML5. Just not getting technical here, the content that you created wouldn't be Flash using a Flash plugin. It would be based on HTML5, which is pretty much all websites are these days, most of them. And so it doesn't matter what device you use, you would still be able to view that content. So once we launched a little focus group, a lot of the people were small businesses, medium and so on, not actually designers. And I noticed they're trying to create like a slide deck using this tool, which was very buggy early on. Or they're trying to create a little graphic, or in those cases, you know, infographics, which is like a very tall presentation, right? Just slides stacking on top of each other. It's the best way I can explain, you know, a presentation in infographic. So, and that's what led me to bring everything together. And that is, hey, why is it that there just needs to be a tool for presentations? Why does there need to be a tool to create infographics? Why does there have to be a tool to create short animations? Why does it have to be a tool to create graphics? So putting all those together, which has been a huge challenge for us, is to bring a presentation tool, a data visualization tool, and a graphical tool all together into one. So it's kind of like if you marry PowerPoint and you know, graphic tools such as Snappa or Canva or many other ones out there. And our forte at VizMe is to give people the ability to create beautiful presentation and other types of content, but not becoming too powerful where you feel like you're in a tool such as Adobe that has a very high learning curve, which is really for the top professionals, right? At the same time, the advantage and a differentiator in our tool is that it's meant for non-designers, meant for the average person. So it's not too restrictive versus some of the other tools out there, where we give you some restriction, but a lot of flexibility so that you can still create very static, normal looking stuff that are great and beautiful. But then you can go almost as far as you want to go to. It's kind of like peeling layers of an onion. So our interface is very easy to use if you've been a PowerPoint user and so on. You go in, you got a slide, you know, it's still slides and you can add slides, but we give you templates, graphics, fonts, you know, everything as a starting point, and you can adjust those and even have it reflect your branding.
As we all know, the SaaS journey, it's not starting off with a perfect product. So how has your product evolved, and how did MVP even look like for a non-designer audience, you know, with half of the features missing? Like, we all know like how it works for the early stage startups. How did it work out for you? How did it evolve into the mature product you are today?
To be honest, I mean, it was a focus group that we put together. About 12, 13 people showed up at about 30, 40 invited. And that's just the way it is usually when you throw events, right? About 50, 60% show up. And it was up to the last minute before people were coming, you know, it was still trying to figure out, we're trying to fix bugs and so on. And this was going almost a year into the development of it. It was very light. It didn't allow you to do a lot. There was very little templates, only a few fonts. But, you know, what happened was, and it didn't even work. It was freezing on some of people's laptops at that point. So you could call it where, oh my God, this is a total failure. But I looked at it as, what can we walk away with? And what we did walk away with is that, hey, I'm noticing in between these issues that people are trying to have a certain outcome. And that outcome was where we went back to the drawing table and just kind of took another 8 months, 9 months. I don't know. It was a while. And then came back and then put it in front of about 600 or 700 beta users that had signed up for it. And it still had issues, but it was actually usable now to some degree. Now, based on that, we went on to just keep, and it was free for over a year. We had no revenues or anything collecting from it, just people using it and getting feedback. And then based on that, we just kept improving and adjusting and so on.
So you opted for the freemium model and you still are freemium these days?
We still are. Yeah, we still are freemium. We have dabbled with even putting trials in front of people. We've done A/B testing, say, hey, you get a 14-day trial and so on. But it seems like, you know, having just a free version where you have certain limitations, but you still can do a decent amount of things, you know, that ends up, looks like it's the best balance for us. So yes, we are a freemium version. And usually those that everybody actually starts, so you cannot literally go for VizMe and get a paid account yet right now. You have to start free and then you can upgrade.
We've got together today. Of course, your founder story is incredibly interesting, but you also have a design passion for the presentations. And let's talk about the presentations themselves and what our listeners can do to design effective presentations for their conference talks, pitch situations, or anything like that. If you were to recap your top three principles for good presentations, what would that be?
Let's see, there's a bunch of principles, but let's break it down into three.
let's do more.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't think I even have the count, but let me see what I can divide it to. It would probably be three or four. By the way, we have in our blog, and we actually, there's a video series I did, and we actually have it. It's called Make Information Beautiful. It's free for everybody to do. With everything is available on our YouTube channel. And then it talks about like the basic principles of presentation design and everything with screenshots, and everything is there. So here's what I would recap from my perspective in a nutshell in a few minutes. You know, one, you know, what is the platform? And so where am I presenting? You know, who is going to be the audience? If I'm going to be creating a presentation where it's meant to be viewed online, it's meant to be sent as a link for people to see or as a downloadable, you know, document, the PowerPoint and so on, that is different than the format of that. I would create it differently than, let's say, I'm going to be in front of an audience and the slide deck is going to be behind me and I'm going to be talking through different slides. So that, I think, is number one thing before you go to any steps is to determine. Because A, if you're going to be, it's going to be as a, you know, presentation that is live, then I'm going to be the storyteller. You, the individual, is going to be the storyteller. And so you're going to be telling the story, and what's behind you is to just complement and support that. So you really don't need much text. You just need certain visuals and just focusing on key statements. So your slides will be extremely light, and they probably might have a sentence, a phrase or a word, even sometimes. You just kind of go through them, right? Or maybe a visual or a combination of both. On the other hand, if I'm creating a presentation, which I'm going to be sending to a client, maybe it's for a proposal, maybe it's for a pitch deck for an investor and so on, or for HR, internal. In that case, nobody's narrating. So I need to have a certain amount of information there. Now, that's where I think people go wrong. That's where they feel that they need to tell everything, and people, you know, the audience cannot figure anything out. So they use full sentences, just your, you know, lots of bullet points. And for some reason, people feel like, you know, you're going to run out of slides. You know, it's a digital format. You can have as many slides as you want. Nobody said. And again, I know there are certain principles out there to talk about your slide deck should not be more than 15 slides or 50 or 100. I understand that. I mean, I think I would take those with a grain of sand in that nobody wrote a Bible saying that is a number. Do not go over it. But at the same time, it shouldn't be 500 slides, right? So in that essence, what people do is they just have way too much content in different slides. You want to lighten that up and focus on the key phrases, key statements, and between the lines, the individual can read through it. Now, the second part of it, I think, would be is to create an outline. I would just put it as the same way as, let's say, if you were to write a book or a very short story, you're going to have an intro, you're going to have a middle and an end. And that structure is what you then use to create, that outline is what you create the structure of your presentation, right? So your welcome slide and your agenda and then sections and subsections. So I would just create a very simple bullet list on paper before you even touch any slides. Once you have that, then you want to dissect it down and say, okay, here's my main section and there's a sub. And now each of those statements or subsections should be followed with what is most important to present in this case. So that might be is where I'm talking about certain stats and figures, let's say financial data. How did we do this quarter or next quarter, where we anticipate? So you're dealing with numbers, therefore you want to visualize those. That may be just a chart. It might be certain, you know, radial figures and so on. And what you didn't do is to, again, always ask the question is, you know, what is the minimum amount of information that I can put in that the audience will understand? And what do I need to highlight? So let's say the number 37% is a big deal. That probably should be highlighted a different color or even larger than the other elements on the screen. So you focus on what is most important. And then three, I would tell a story. So I think most people, especially in the corporate world and business world, they think of a business presentation as something that has to be very stale and very boring. And it just, you know, needs to just talk about what that information is and nothing else. I think, you know, most business presentations are just extremely boring. You know, you sit there and after a few minutes, you lose focus and you want to grab your phone and check your feed and so on. Or let's say if it's sent to me as a link after a few slides, I'm just starting to go through it quickly because you didn't grab my attention. You had nothing interesting that made my mind wander through and think about the next thing. So the way that I would look at the approach on it, whether you're presenting or whether it's the actual slide, is to introduce certain elements that will recapture the user's attention. So if I'm presenting from an audience, and whether it's the slide deck behind me, every so often, I might have something of a joke or something funny, something even cheesy, something that at least makes the audience stop for a moment and laugh or maybe think that wasn't funny. Either way, you got their attention. So you can move on to the next thing. So it's like a movie, you know, you raise the bar and you lower it. So you kind of reach a climax and then you drop down again. So you get a little loud, you get a little quiet, and that's how you want to do it. You're telling a story, but then you also have interesting moments and you kind of take them through a little roller coaster. So you want to think about it as, and we've got this on a principles of, I think, presentation, or the principles of presentations, I think we have in our blog post that we did. And there's this very interesting illustration that on the header of the blog post, and it's a roller coaster that one of our illustrators drew, trying to use the concept of that as a way you tell a story or that you present. And basically, if you were to stand at an angle and look at a roller coaster, it has these curves and ups and downs and little hills. And so that's the way you want to think of the way that you're presenting or you're giving a presentation to your audience.
How have you arrived to these learnings? Have you done a ton of presentations yourself, or have you interviewed gurus of the field, or maybe read books about it to compile the information?
You know, all of the above to some degree. It hasn't been where I went on this adventure and spent hundreds and hundreds of hours researching and so on. No, it hasn't been like that. I mean, after about 6 or 7 years of getting in front of audiences, talking about VisMe, talking about how it started, inception, and our challenges and so on and so on. And, you know, that after doing tens of those, you kind of figure out what gets people's attention and doesn't. So you kind of have this trial and error learning experience. You know, I mean, I don't think by any means I'm a great presenter at all. I do not think. People say I am, but I don't think so because I look at other people do a great job. However, when I get in front of an audience, I can make them laugh. I can make them, you know, not cry. I haven't done that yet. But I'll get them, you know, I'll get their attention. I'll make the point. So, you know, it's been a little bit through that. The other one has been, of course, there's so much slide decks out there on SlideShare and resources, you know, on other blogs and sites. I mean, what we did, we've probably written tens of different posts and created tens of videos, short videos, 5, 6, 7, 8 minute videos that talk about lessons and presentations and so on. And some of those I was in that I was doing early on. And now my colleague Mike does that. So then we have, of course, our user base, which is over 4.5 million people that have, you know, created a VisMe and so on. A portion of those are for presentations. Many of them are doing it for other things, infographics and so on. But when it comes to presentations, there is many examples that they've shared online or they've sent to us and, you know, put on galleries and so on. So we get to see what people are creating. And based on those, we've been able to find areas of improvement that we believe, A, the tool should have, two, that we believe our templates itself should provide them. And three, that, hey, you know, you can give people the best tool possible, but if they just don't have the know-how of some basic design principles, then if they don't apply those, it doesn't matter what tool they use. You could put the most beautiful template in front of them and they could just, you know, take that nice, you know, color of the background, just make it bright green on a red text. I mean, so, you know, that's something that people, you know, so you want to teach them some very basic principles. And there is one of the first videos that I did was called the 19 Design Mistakes That Non-Designers Make. It's one of the, if you were to put design mistakes, I think on YouTube, I think that video comes up and I'm on at like number one position or two. And that one, I don't think, it was one of the first videos I did. So I kind of laugh when I watch it. I did a pretty bad job, but the points were all true. And it's just talking about some very basic things, contrast, you know, using the right fonts and, you know, backgrounds and a balance, spacing. And these all sound, when you mention it to people that are non-designers, they freak out. Like, oh, I'm not a designer. I can't figure it out. But they're so simple to learn. And you just hear it and you see a few examples. If you just put, you know, not 19, 2 or 3 of those into practice each time that you do it, before you know it, you're actually creating something decent. And so, you know, that's another angle that we go about.
Our audience is primarily designers, so they know how to make it aesthetically beautiful, so that's already a relief. That aside, what mistakes they should be avoiding in preparing their slide decks?
As a designer myself, I could definitely say that's something I'm guilty of. I think designers in general, and again, I'll probably get some grief for this, but I think it's true if you really think about it. Most designers are not great user experience people. Unless they've been very versed on it, and unless they've worked with somebody else in that field, they've worked on a product or with a group of individuals, or they've just learned themselves. And what I mean by that, there's a lot of great designs. I mean, you can go to Behance, for example, but some amazing stuff that designers create, illustrators create. And to another designer, it might be great, but, you know, it might be for marketing or other use cases. Sometimes I look at some of these things and they're so beautiful, but I'm like, what's the point? What's the point as in what's the message? What are you trying to relay to me? Or it might be a website, it might be an app and so on. And it's not necessarily the best user experience. You know, so actually, I'll give you an example. One of the biggest challenges that I have when we bring in designers in-house to create the thousands of templates that's growing in a Visme library, that are beautiful templates and so on, often I would say 3 out of 4 times, professional designer has been doing it for a while, or even the junior ones. Let's say they create a template for a social graphic or a Twitter post. And because it looks so nice and clean, they use a font that's very, you know, sans serif, and it's very clean, it's very thin, and it's tiny text. And it's almost impossible to read sometimes. And, you know, so I bring up this question in that, okay, you're looking at this at 100% zoom because, you know, we're creating a template at, I forgot what it is, 1200 by 600 or 1200 by 900 pixels. I don't know off of my head what that the size is for a Twitter post. And I'm like, you know, can you zoom out of what it actually would look like on a Twitter post? And when you do it, it's so small. So the example I'm giving is that you have to think about the medium you're presenting on and that, you know, it shouldn't be where I want to create a beautiful presentation. It should be more of, I want to create an impactful and compelling presentation that achieves an outcome that actually educates or teaches, or that audience that are viewing it or looking at it, they get the point. So I would consider design as a medium, as a delivery point to support the messaging that you're doing. So UX first, I think, and then design, versus design first, and let's figure out the user experience.
Are there any speakers out there that are absolutely killing it with their talks, I guess? And does it necessarily mean that they're killing it with their slide decks? And are there any speakers who do fantastic slide decks in particular that you could just like eagerly take apart and teach everyone else?
We're talking, you know, in terms of design and marketing, if it has to do with marketing, you're talking to everybody in this audience, or most people would probably know of Gary Vaynerchuk, right? And if you look at it, when was the last time he had a slide deck behind him? But then you listen to the guy on LinkedIn and you listen to him on his YouTube videos and so on, a vlog, you know, he has no pitch deck, but he's presenting. He's telling a story. It's just that energy, that passion. And you can find him as annoying as you want, and he cusses all the time. You know, he has the F word between every sentence. But however, people pay attention, and you can't help but to watch him and listen to him. So that kind of goes back to what I said. It's not so much just about the presentation. Here, we're talking about UI and presentation design 100%. But my point is that it's both of those need to complement. So you could look at it that way, in that he's so damn good at it and has so much energy and passion, and he doesn't even need a slide deck behind him, right? So that's another. You know, so there's a number of them. I think Guy Kawasaki does a great job. And I think there's a couple times I've seen actually the same pitch deck. For some reason, I just lost my thought as far as his last name. But Seth, of course, he's known. Seth, I believe his last name starts with a G. I apologize. I forgot his last name.
Godin.
That's right. Seth Godin. That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. There we go. Apologies for his, everybody knows his name. I think he's a great presenter. I've seen him do the same presentation in a couple different events. In the same slide deck, actually. It hadn't changed, the same thing, but it was still interesting watching it through. So I think he started off with this guy, you know, professional bicyclist. And he's just scrolling, and it's a video. It's like one slide, and it's a video. And if I recall correctly, he didn't even have text on that slide. It's just a video. And he's just racing down this this mountain or this hill. And, you know, and he's passing everybody else. And all he does is he actually almost puts his legs up on the chair and becomes like a missile versus actually pedaling down. So, that you know, he starts off that and it gets your attention, and then he goes on to the pitch. So I think he's great as well. So that goes back to the example, right? Climax and starting with something that gets people's attention and they find you interesting enough, and then being able to pick them up every few slides with something else and follow through.
Storytelling comes up once again and once again. Are there any books or resources where people can get themselves better at storytelling?
Not to promote, you know, our product, not to promote the product, but educational resource. And the reason I'm saying it is that, again, honestly, it's not about promoting and getting people to go to the videos and resources we've created, but it's actually because one of the things we're doing at Visme is on the educational side. It's our blog, visme.co/blog, or going on YouTube and just typing Visme, all the videos that we have is because they're actually a compilation of a lot of the resources out there where we looked at and like, okay, if you know, this post that we wrote on, let's say, presentation principles, there's many different articles out there. And each of them covers a certain area of it. Who's going to sit down and spend hours and hours reading it? A lot of people wouldn't, right? So we compile it into one article and post. And that's why I'm mentioning that. Or that same post, we then repurpose into a video. that is only 6 or 7 or 8 minutes long. It has all the visuals there. And my colleague Mike doing the videos, you know, talks about it. So you can actually learn these things in a matter of, you know, when I say learn, I mean, you can view it and watch it. Sometimes, you know, you may want to revisit and then watch something again a couple of times in a matter of minutes, not having to do that. Because I think that one of the biggest challenges with people and why a lot of the productivity tools are doing so well, or tools such as VisMe and many others like it are doing well, is because you're improving productivity and you're getting people to the end line a lot faster. People want instant gratification, which, you know, is terrible to say, but that's what we as humans want. We want instant. You don't have instant, but you can make it faster. You can get an outcome a little bit quicker so that you can focus on other things.
Let's focus on a few practical aspects of creating presentations. And number one question I think most people face is where to get professional looking images. Shall they, I don't know, Google for them? Shall they use Unsplash? What is your solution if they're not using your software?
If they're using our software, we're already integrated with Unsplash. So there's over I don't know if it's 1.3 or 1.5 million images through Unsplash that you can use. So our library is already connected to that. However, outside, so if you go through Google directly and just search for images, you'll find a lot of things. But the problem is the filtration is not very good. You see all sorts of images. And then secondarily, a lot of these images either are going to take you to a stock photo site you need to purchase, or it's scraped off of some website out there, which you may not have permission to use it for commercial purposes and so on, right? So that's a disadvantage. You can go to stock photo sites and purchase photos one by one, right? Or you can go to free resources such as Unsplash, Pixabay, and so on. And in our case, we've integrated with the, you know, Unsplash. So yeah, I mean, there's resources out there, but it depends on what you're looking for. And again, speaking of images, then we need to go to videos and so on. And I guess there's one thing I would mention that just happens that today on the 25th of February, we're talking yesterday. I'm not sure if you're aware or not, we launched our biggest update that was in the works for over a year and a half. So the new version of VisMe just rolled out. That is a game changer for people who have been in it. They're finding it amazing because it also now has a video library. So you can actually drag and drop
thousands
of videos.
Congratulations on that.
Yeah. So that's the next thing, which takes me to, right? We're talking about images. And I think the next chapter for people to create compelling graphics, presentations, and so on is the interactivity portion of it, which is very interesting because it's taken 6.5 years to where initially VisMe was supposed to be an animation tool. Now coming back, we're going back to that, to our roots, where you can create more compelling interactive content. And so there's all these animated illustrations all the way down to animated characters and so on. So you can create presentations that you can actually use an emotional factor. We have gestures that's like a handshake or a thumbs up, thumbs down, all animated, just drag and drop, beautifully done. You can change the color of the skin, you know, to from dark, medium tone to light. And the reason I'm mentioning that is because I think that's the next chapter when it comes in. Everybody is creating presentations or PowerPoints and, you know, using it, but creating a lot of graphics and so on. The next part, I think, is about you're inundated with so much of these. What allows you to be a little bit unique and set yourself apart from the other person, from the other presenters and so on out there? The storytelling will never change, but the medium that you put in front of them, the visuals you put in front of them, if they follow through and connect and support the story that you're telling, then there's research after research connecting, you know, visuals with actual text or statements sticks a lot more in your head, in your brain. It's so much easier than, let's say, just hearing someone say something. So that's, I think, is a big factor in the future of presentations.
When it comes to sort of art directing your images, why is that Unsplash, for example, is better than typical Shutterstock or something like that? There's this feeling of being non-promotional about Unsplash photos. Is there any way you can put this in words?
I wouldn't say that it's necessary. I wouldn't look at it as better or worse. I mean, you could say one stock photo site versus another that you pay for gives you a different amount of photos or certain quality and so on. Unsplash is really a conglomerate of photographers, passionate photographers that just want to put their work out there. And they just want to, create this. It's almost like open source, right? Just to, create this huge library of beautiful images that's out there. And so that is something that is very special, right? And so that's why a lot of their photos and so on, is the quality is amazing. And sometimes it doesn't feel like stock photo site. Now, the other part, though, of course, Unsplash is much heavier on the landscape and environmental graphics and so on, right? Photos. Yet, if you go to stock photo sites, they have so much more on the people and then groups and business. And the problem is a lot of times they look very stock, you know, stockish. You know, so I think if it, regardless of which of those resources you use, it's up to you to what you like or don't. I think a tip when it comes to presentation is, look, either have it just a solid background or some abstract photo, or just, you know, or avoid using photos that just so clearly appear like stock. So let's say you have the, you know, the commonly seen photo where two professionals in suits are shaking hands, and you have that as like, you know, product or services. I mean, it's so overdone. It's so 90s, you know, that you just want to stay away from those. You'd be better off with just a very clean slide with a big text stating something, maybe an icon that supports that message, versus having that photo in a backdrop or just an abstract of a landscape, you know, a desert and so on. I think you can't go wrong with those.
What are your recommendations for writing copy for your slides? Well, number one is obviously being more concise and keeping them short. Any other recommendations?
I'm a terrible writer. I mean, I'll say that right off the bat. So, but what I do feel helps is anybody can write an outline of a story, right, over a presentation. You write the outline and you just have maybe a short sentence or phrase for each of those. And then you go back. Now you might have like a three-page document. And starting to get a little bit lengthy, right, depending on how many sections you have. Now you go back, and I suggest is you just go in and just bold the words and the phrases in those statements that you feel are most important. So you're going to notice you're going to be getting rid of a lot of this and, you know, ofs and so on. And it just ends up being these little words. Now you can lighten that sentence. You can shorten it. And then, you know, you shorten it down to where it is the least, you know, you can't shorten any further. It's as short as it can be. And it still makes sense. That, I think, is the end result of the statement that you want to use, or text that you want in your slide. So, you know, and I think, you know, inspirationally, you can look at a lot of great slide decks out there and examples out there. They give you a good starting point. One of the things we've done at VizMe is very different than the other tools. We're really happy about what we've done because people have loved it, is that we stopped creating presentation templates. We started creating presentation themes. So what is the difference? Presentation templates often are, you know, 8 to 10 slides, 12 slides in a template. So do you have a, you know, a product, you know, agenda, list, process, and maybe thank you. You have a bunch of slides. And when you create that presentation, soon, most people, 90% of the time, when you're trying to put it against your text, you run out of slides. And you have to get creative. Now you got to move things around and try to figure out how to make it fit. So what we did was said, okay, you know what? No more presentation templates. Even though we have some of those, maybe less than 100, we only started creating themes. We only have three presentation themes. We have modern, we have creative, and we have simple. Each of them has a certain look and feel, right? So the modern is very modern looking, simple is very, very clean edges and minimal and so on. And creative is a little more for design, it still looks very professional looking. And each of those is made up of hundreds of slides. So, you know, once you have that outline created, then in VizMe, you go in and you start adding your slides. So we have 20 something categories in each of these. Everything from thank you to agenda to list of comparisons, charts, all of those have categories. And when you see that, so let's say I'm looking for a comparison. We have 10, 15, 20 slides, every possible combination of the way the content should be laid out. And so all you do is just drag and drop that. And it's basically filled up with very simple placeholder content. But you are able to create the structure of your presentation. And then as soon as you do that, we've already kind of shown you how long your text should be or how short should be. So you now have an idea in that if you're putting something there and it's too long, you should probably shorten it. And you can't go wrong because you have a quick way of achieving the end result that looks very clean and professional because all you did was edit the text. So I think that's another way of putting it through is, you know, very short, simplified text. Just focus on the key points and that's it.
Light background or dark background? What do things better for overhead projectors?
I guess depends on the lighting. Depends on the lighting set. You can't go wrong with white. But, you know, I think if I'm in a dark room, I will probably want to stick with a dark background or a darker shade versus black. But, you know, I've seen presentations done beautifully in both of them. So it just depends on the setting. Now, however, we as designers, we don't necessarily want everything to always be white because, again, minimal design, yes. but we want to explore colors, want to bring some excitement to it, and so on. I think it's a matter of preference. You know, I don't think you can go wrong. It's just a matter of what you put on the actual slides.
It's really helpful to alternate because I think as I evolved as a designer, I started from feeling obligated to keep everything uniform.
Yes.
And right now I feel obligated to keep everything diverse, like among the slides and everywhere else. So just alternating white and black can also be pretty dramatic effect.
I 100% agree with you. I mean, it could be white or black, or it could be, you know, going between tones of the same color or different colors. Again, as long as it, you know, it makes sense. It looks professional. But I think that it kind of goes back to what I mentioned, right? We're having this deviation. Everything is not so uniform. When I say, you know, have an up or a down, I'm talking about a roller coaster, that could actually be also the color or the types of graphics that you're using. Now, of course, again, I'm not talking about using outline icons and then switching to isometric and then back to, let's say, flat. But that uniformity is good, but using colors or certain elements to so that it's not so consistent. I agree with you. That's a great point. You could start with a dark slide as a cover, right? And then switch the next slide to a very light. And then each section could be a dark slide. So it's a transitional thing, you know, in between. So you're almost breaking things down into chapters and sections. I think that's very clear. Versus, let's say, and this is your old school PowerPoint, you have a 30 slide presentation and then slide 1 and then 5 and 10 and 15, basically they are utilizing the changes in color. I'm sorry, what they're doing is, you know, it's all white, right? So even your header is white, and that's where it causes some issues.
If you're doing a conference talk, I have found it pretty helpful to put some information, for example, the hashtag for the conference and maybe your Twitter handle in the corner. Do you think that can be useful, or is it more for the week of heart and the true presenters just have, you know, a couple words in the middle of the screen, nothing else?
Yeah, I think that's us. Well, you see that as well, Greg.
So what is your opinion on that?
I'm not sure. I mean, I could be between either one. I couldn't speak either way on that. It's cool though.
As we're wrapping up today's conversation, thanks so much for sharing your advice. Where can people find your product online? And maybe you would like to share a discount. I've heard you have one for us.
Sure, made one for you. How's that? Feel special?
That's good, right? Absolutely.
We actually don't. We often do not give much discounts away. We do once in a while give discounts where it's like off your first purchase. But I just figured that it would be great. And I think it would be great for your audience to have it. Because again, when we talk about VizMe, we promote it and mention it as, you know, a non-designer's tool. You know, and so often designers who have or UI people think of it as that's not for me. You know, for example, tools such as Canva and some of the other ones, they're extremely well designed for the non-designer, right? They give you an outcome extremely quickly. But you as a designer, professional designer, you're going to have a lot of limits on it. We're that, but also give you more. So, for example, why companies and teams that come and use VizMe is that the designer can go in and create the templates and actually has so much freedom to do things and move things around wherever they want, lock objects down so other people cannot accidentally do that, set up the brand guidelines. So designers in those organizations love us because there's a brand section that they can set, and their audience, the rest of the team users, they can focus on just editing simple text and content and so on, and they come back to them when they need something that's really worth for them spending time on, right? I mean, nothing's more frustrating than someone having, you know, being a great designer and then having to edit text in a PowerPoint and send it back. I mean, that's not fun, right? That's not what we're made for. We're made to sit down and design and create cool stuff. So there is a code that I will give, and it's basically the name of your podcast, so UI Breakfast. And that one, you know, when you go to sign up in VizMe, again, you start free. And if you ever want to go with the paid versions, any of the business plans, use that code and it will give you 20% off of the total purchase. And that's ongoing. So as long as you're a subscriber, well, we have pricing starts as low as $25 a month. You will get 25% off of that. And as long as you're a subscriber, you will always have that discount. And just a little note, on our checkout, if you were to do that, there's a tiny little icon, gray icon with a percent. That's the one you click. It's kind of hidden. that's the one you put your discount code in.
That's because a promo code Phil will kill your conversions if you add it in an open.
Yeah, it could kill your conversion because everybody's like, where's my discount? But we don't really give discounts much, except, you know, your podcast and sometimes our webinars. And as far as finding, of course, you can, you know, to learn about VizMe, you just type in VizMe on Google or www.vizme.com or .co. It goes to the same place. And then to connect with me, the best place would be on LinkedIn. So you can just type my name in. I promise you, there's nobody else with my first name and last name together. So only one result should come up. It's Payman, P-A-Y-M-A-N. And the last name is Tai, T-A-E.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for sharing your wisdom today. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your week.
Alrighty, great. Well, thank you very much, Jane.